ChristianCommunity.com. How's everybody? Wow. Yes. So, this is odd because I'm not having a guitar in front of me. I have this. And so, I'm going to be speaking today. And today we're going to talk about extraordinary. Extraordinary. I screw that up. It's extraordinary, not extraordinary. So, who here wants to be used by God? I'm guessing everybody. And who wants to make a difference? Who believes God uses people to make a difference? So how many of you are ready to be used by God? And I know a lot of times that we wait for perfect timing to move ahead or to do something, that we wait for a sign from God, or we completely ignore an opportunity because we aren't smart enough, strong enough, we're not brave enough, we're not good enough. But gosh darn it, I'm beautiful. But we shouldn't. We shouldn't wait. We shouldn't hold. I really believe that having that that hesitation there, that's the devil's way of stopping us from doing something that the Lord wants to do. And in extraordinary things that he can do with us ordinary folks. So, God doesn't ask us to have it all together before we're allowed to have impact. And believe it or not, this is going to be a shocker, Facebook is a fairy tale. I know that we're led to believe this false reality that people all have their ducks in a row, but it's like Scott said a couple weeks ago, we don't have ducks, we have squirrels. They're not in a row, they're at a rave. So God doesn't need us to have the book of Numbers memorized before he can use us. He doesn't need us to have the square root of 7,468. He doesn't to speak publicly without sweating through your shirt. The truth is God doesn't actually need any of us. He orchestrated the design of the universe on his own. And because he loves us so much, he has given mankind a choice to love him back or not. God chooses to use us to reach his children. And we have the privilege of serving this God. And how many times do we consider ourselves to be too insignificant to do anything? God uses screwed up people all the time. I have nothing to say to that, Adam. Good job. So I'm going to start with a story here. Talk about, as many of you know, Rachel and I have started getting involved in fostering recently. And that was something that we have kind of been pursuing on and off for a couple of years prior to this. And every time that we started to do a little something with it, some of the paperwork, all of a sudden we would have some kind of a medical issue or some kind of issue at home. We would put it on hold, figure this is just too much going on right now, and we need to just hold off until things are quieter. And that happened quite a few times. And finally, this last summer in 2017, I made it my mission and my job to sit down and do all the paperwork and make sure we had all the interviews, all the watched all the videos, and get everything done. And so we did. And we got our license on Friday, January 12th, 2018. And the girls moved in on Tuesday, January 16th. And from the start of this process, we told the county right away, like, we can't handle more than one. Like, one child is what we can really handle in our house. And, of course, we got a phone call for two girls, and we met them and just kind of like, yeah, we have to do this. So the funny thing is that God knew we could handle one child, but he wants us to depend on him, and so we got two, so that we need to depend on him more, and he's showing us that we need him. And every day well, I shouldn't say every day, but on a regular occasion, Rachel and I are like, yeah, there's no way we could do this without God right now. Like, he has his hand on so many different things where I get frustrated and then I tag off and then Rachel takes over. And it's like we go back and forth, and for some reason we're both not drained. One of us has always got the energy to do it, to keep going. But this isn't about us. This is an opportunity for God to get the glory, not for us to. So our normal, ordinary family has become a big, extraordinary family. So the idea of God using ordinary people isn't new. He's been doing extraordinary things with ordinary people for a long time. So let's look at Moses here. A little background on Moses, as a lot of you know. Moses was raised as an Egyptian prince with all the luxuries that royalty affords. One day, he sees an Egyptian beating up one of his people, a Hebrew. He strikes the Egyptian down, killing him, flees the land, becomes a shepherd. He went from royalty to a shepherd. And to many, this is a major step in the wrong direction. And yet, here we are, still talking about his role in our spiritual history thousands of years later. So we're going to pick up the story here with Moses through a burning bush. And God is telling Moses he needs to go to Egypt to lead the Israelites out. So Exodus 4, 1 through 17, it'll be up on the screen, and this is the ESV version. So then Moses answered, "But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, 'The Lord did not appear to you.' The Lord said to him, 'What is it that what is that in your hand?' And he said, 'A staff.' And he said, 'Throw it on the ground.' So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses ran from it. But the Lord said to Moses, 'Put your hand and catch it. Put out your hand and catch it by the tail.' So he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand. That they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Again, the Lord said to him, 'Put your hand inside your cloak.' And he put his hand inside his cloak. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow. Then God said, 'Put your hand back inside your cloak.' So he put his hand back inside his cloak, and when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. 'If they will not believe you,' God said, 'or listen to the first sign, they may believe the latter sign. If they will not believe even these two signs or listen to your voice, you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it on dry ground, and the water that you shall take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground.' But Moses said to the Lord, 'O my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and of tongue.' Then the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak.' But he said, 'O my Lord, please send someone else.' Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, 'Is there not Aaron your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. And you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be your mouth, and with his mouth I will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. And take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs.'" So, God turns a staff into a snake and then back into a staff again. Then God puts a disease on Moses' hand and then takes it away. And God tells Moses that if the people don't believe you yet, take the water from the Nile, pour it on dry ground, and it will turn into blood. So that wasn't enough for Moses. He proceeds to tell God he can't do it. He's not a good speaker. He's not goodly at talking. You're right, it didn't work. I thought that would have been funny. I should listen to my wife. I got another one coming up, and you guys don't fail me. You better laugh. I know Otis and Thomas will, because they already know this one. It's coming up. So Moses even begs God to send someone else. Can you imagine begging to God? Like, you just saw two miracles in front of your face, three if you count the burning bush that's not being consumed, that God, the God of the universe, is talking to you. And then Moses is like, I don't speak well. I can't do it. I don't know what I would do if I was Moses. I would probably be freaked out. But I'm pretty sure God could fix anything. In fact, I know he can. So God brings Moses' brother Aaron into the picture and uses Aaron as the one who speaks. And so here we have the great Moses of the Bible, the guy that God uses for the parting of the Red Sea, the Ten Commandments, met God on Mount Sinai. I mean, this is an ordinary guy who's got hesitation, who's terrified, who's worried, who's scared, questions God of the universe. He's an ordinary guy. He's not some Superman that's got a cape on or anything like that. So God is using an ordinary person to do extraordinary things again. So we're all ordinary people. No one's any different. Well, besides Rachel. She's above and beyond. She's not ordinary. Bonus points? All right. So now, not only is it about ordinary people, but it's about ordinary things. God can do that. Use extraordinary things through ordinary things. So I want to talk about the first suspension bridge that was over the Niagara Falls Gorge. Did you know, I don't know if anybody knows this, but the first bridge over the Niagara Falls Gorge was started by a 15 or 16-year-old boy. It depends on which article you're reading. I got everything from a 13, 14, 15, or 16-year-old boy. So we're going to go 15, 16. But the two companies to build this bridge, they couldn't figure out how to get this bridge started across the 800-foot section of the river. And so somebody had the idea of doing a kite flying contest. And so they did that. They had a contest, and the winner of the contest would win $5 American. And this was in 1848, so it was, that was a lot of money back then. So it happened to be the day that he had the contest on the 29th of January, so on the 30th of January, this 15-year-old boy, Homan Walsh, flew a kite from one side of the gorge to the other, and somebody got it, and they tied it around a tree. And then they took that string and tied a thicker string to it, and they pulled it across from that kite string. Then they got a thicker one, and they pulled it across, and they kept going back and forth till they ended up getting a steel cable that could hold the weight of the workers, their materials, and the tools. And so that's how this bridge was first started. So something extraordinary started by something ordinary, by someone ordinary who didn't have any bridge building experience. Homan just used what he had. So I want to talk about being resourceful with the gifts that we've been given and not wasting. The parable of talents. We're going to look at Matthew 25, 14 through 29. Again, it will be up there. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, and to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled the accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the two talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me two talents. Here, I have made two more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the one talent came forward and saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed, so I was afraid. And I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who was given more, for everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. So this parable is talking about talents, and it's not talking about, you know, like, I don't know, talents like my talent to eat a lot of Twinkies or that kind of a talent, but it's talking about, just getting the nod from Rachel, sorry. Talents at this time was talking about money, finances, and most scholars here agree that a talent in this time was 20 years worth of a salary. So one talent is worth 20 years. So this first guy, the master gave the servant 5 talents. So he gave him 100 years worth of a salary. The next guy had 40 years, and the last guy had 20. So the servant with only one talent buried it instead of investing it like the other two. So the master was not happy that he buried it. So the servant was not being resourceful with what was given to him. So God has given each and every one of you a talent and a gift. Everyone. And we need to use those gifts, no matter how small, insignificant, and ordinary we might think that they are, or how uncomfortable we might get. We need to invest in the kingdom of God. Don't put them on a shelf. Don't hide them. Don't bury them. So, when I was growing up, I grew up in a Christian home. And so when I got into high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I was praying and got silence from God. So, I went to Fox Valley Tech for hospitality and tourism management. And basically, it's a fancy way of saying restaurant manager, hotel manager. So, after working at Subway and BK, I figured out I could handle being a restaurant manager. So then I got my associate's degree, finished the program, and started praying again. I'm like, now what? And very, very slowly, things started to come together where I got involved in a young adult small group, and the guy who was leading worship in this small group happened to leave and go to school. And so they needed somebody to fill in to lead some worship for this group of about 50 people. And in middle school, I did start taking guitar lessons, and I got, you know, a few chords here and there. But I never really picked it up, didn't play. As much as I wanted to sound like, you know, Poison or Motley Crue, I couldn't. So, yes, I did say Poison in public. I was a Poison fan. Still am. Yes. I'm not the only one. And so I started playing the songs, and I would have somebody else sing because there was no freaking way I was going to sing in front of people, ever. And it failed miserably because we couldn't communicate with how to start songs or whatever. So I'm like, fine, I'll sing. So I would sing real quietly and play. And that led to doing worship every week, which led to getting involved eventually with the youth group at Christ the Rock, which is where I met Eric a few years ago. Like a few 20 years ago or something like that. And that's when Eric was like, hey, how about you take over for the youth worship, Bob? And I did, and Eric still regrets that decision. And it just kind of progressed and over, and here I am now. So I have my associate's degree from Fox Valley Tech for hospitality and tourism management. Never in the million years did I think that I would be a worship leader. Never in a million years did I think I would ever sing in front of people. And never did I think that my degree at the tech from this would apply to what I'm doing now. Because basically a big part of what I do is my job here at church is I manage the worship team. I manage people. And that's like the main thing for that degree that I got. So I took little baby steps and just kind of stayed faithful with where I was going and what I was doing. And God has completely used that. So I'm not only managing worship team stuff, I'm also managing our chaotic home. I was a manager at Subway. Yes, sandwich artist. So not only as a manager, when I was at Subway for a few years, one of the things that I really, as a manager, that I really believe is that the employees are going to work as hard as the manager. And so I would always bust my tail, and I would be the one to pull crap out and clean the walls and clean the stuff that nobody would want to, because I'm expecting them to do that. And I just wanted to be, the other part of it too, is wanting to be faithful with God that was given me, and is my time, my energy, and the ability to do this. I didn't want to cut corners for the company. I didn't want to try to cheat my way through this. I just wanted to be honest. And it's amazing on how that attitude has really opened up doors to have conversations about my faith and has opened up conversations about Christ. And there was one time when I was working, the assistant manager, I got moved from one store to another. The assistant manager at this new store hated my guts before she even met me because she wanted to be manager. And it was like two of us working 8 to 4. And I'd say for about 4 weeks, she did not say one word. It was just quiet in there the whole time we would work. And she hated me. But I just kept trucking. I kept working. And then finally, one day, she looks at me and she's like, "What is wrong with you? Something is different." And I'm like, "I took a shower last week." Okay, I didn't say that, but that opened up the door for us to talk about why I'm different. Like, what was different about me? And it opened up a lot of doors. Being faithful in the small things. Was I adequately trained for that? No. Like, I was freaking out about sharing my faith. I still do. But being faithful in the small things, and then God will take over, and he will fill in the inadequacies that we have. But this all starts with a small, ordinary thing, whether it's a job, a talent, finances, or whatever. And the hard part is that we live in a world that is obsessed with the biggest and the best things. Nobody wants to even look at the small things because we want to make huge impacts. Everything needs to be huge. Everything needs to have huge impact, as little effort as possible. But the big things typically start with the little ordinary things. And the problem is that the little things aren't always cool. And we have to be faithful in the ordinary. And many of us want to be spiritual giants, but we aren't even faithful in the small things, like reading the Bible every day. It's not sexy, so we don't want to read the Bible or come to church on Sundays. It's like wanting the perfect body but never working out. This doesn't happen for everybody. I know some of you got to work at it. But it's little by little, little steps. Look at Moses. He spent 40 years of his life tending sheep until the Lord appeared to him at Horeb. And he needed to care for the sheep. And maybe that was Moses' training to help him lead the Israelites out of Egypt. It's not very exciting to tend sheep. I haven't done it, but I imagine it's pretty ordinary. Sitting and watching these little furry-looking things, they're going, bah. It's probably pretty snoozing, taking naps, I'm sure. So again, it might not be exciting, but we need to be faithful in the small, ordinary things. And I know that it's hard. I get it. And no one is saying that it's easy. Day after day, hour after hour, minute by minute. Sometimes it even feels extraordinary. Maybe even mundane. But I want to say, if that's you right now, I want to encourage you to stay the course. Commit everything you have to God and don't hold back. If you are holding back, He knows it, because you have nothing to lose. So why not give it all? And part of that commitment to God is to fully engage in a church family. And if you're here, I encourage you to get engaged in this family. We are in this together, not just showing up on Sundays once in a while. That's not engaging into anything. That's just consuming and watching. Be a part of this family. We are all here together. We're here to pray with each other, to help each other, to serve with each other. And I'm sure that this small little community could make a huge impact on the bigger community. God will use us if we just take that step. But we are all ordinary people serving an extraordinary God, and we are in this together. So whether it's tending sheep for 40 years, or working in an office for 40 years, or setting up our new half-hour flower power coffee hour thing before church, I screwed that whole thing up. Eric was smiling at me. It just messed me up. The setting up of our half-hour flower power coffee hour before church until someone else finally volunteers for 40 years to set it up. You never know when God will bring you an opportunity to impact the kingdom. And know that in the end, it will be worth it. I can't wait to hear our Heavenly Father say to me, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." And I hope that is something that you guys are looking forward to. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Is that something that you're going to hear the Father say to you? Are you being faithful with the resources that God has given you? Even the little insignificant tasks. Are you struggling with your ordinary life? Well, buckle up. God might turn your walking stick into some 24-inch python. Hulk Hogan reference right there. Come on. And ask you to, he might turn your walking stick into a 24-inch python and ask you to free an entire nation from slavery. Or he might ask you to simply keep on living the life that begs the question, what's different about you? The truth is, we don't know when or how God will use us, and we will never feel ready enough. Our priority should be to stay faithful in the little things and to wholly commit to God and be willing when He asks you to be a part of something extraordinary. So I want to end with a quote here by Daniel Fusco that I heard. We need to learn to go small so God can go big. We are ordinary people who need to be faithful in the ordinary things to allow God to be extraordinary. Will you pray with me? Father, again, we can't thank you enough for the love that you have for us, for the fact that you are there no matter what, through the small things, through the little things, through the insignificant things, that you are right there with us and that we can't do anything without you. And we know that you are willing and ready and waiting for us. We love you, and I just ask right now that you would help all of us, help us all to just to commit to you, not be afraid of missing out on anything else, but we don't want to miss out on you. No matter how boring it might be, we want to stay committed to you because we know what you have is so much bigger than anything that we could plan or want. Just we ask you to continue to be here and just use us as you will. We thank you in your holy name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of the Portico Church in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You can find out more about our church at porticocommunity.com.